thank each and every one of you for coming down, sharing with us your thoughts, strengths, and wisdom on this subject. It's what makes this whole thing worthwhile for all of us, and it's what makes it an effective process. So, seriously, thank each of you.
Sure.
I'd like to just expand that a little bit. This has been an issue for a long, long time, and I think it's very appropriate that we do move forward. There's other withdrawals for human consumption that are anticipated, as well as just the unknown with the resource, fisheries resources thing going on there. So I'm very pleased that this has come forward and that we're going to be able to fund it.
Yeah. Congratulations on your new job, buddy.
Thank you.
Fairly. Knowing you, it seems like a lifetime. any other comments, discussions?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, again, Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
Mr. Chair, Legislative Fiscal recommends that the request be slightly modified to increase the lottery funds expenditure limitation by $521,340, which is the amount, the exact amount of the three projects being proposed by the agency. And we'd also recommend that the Department of Administrative Services be asked to unschedule the $500,000 of that amount because the RFPs have not been returned, and there's no indication exactly how much the study will cost. And so until that information is received by the agency, we would ask DAS to unschedule that amount.
Question? Just my understanding would be, and if we do that, can once they select a contractor, read upon a price, then the DAS would have the authority then to schedule the amount.
That's
correct. They don't need to come back and
no, they would not need to come back. That's a DAS could reschedule at any time.
Okay.
They have the land. We're trusting you. Any further comments, discussions? I'm looking for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation to the full committee with a due process.
Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none? And with a great big thank you to you guys. So ordered.
Senator Yee would like to carry.
Senator Yee, and she's on. That's a good idea. Good suggestion, Representative Morgan. Issue 42, Watershed Enhancement Grant Application for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Jeff Huntington, Director of OWEB. This request is for retroactive approval to apply for a $6.1 million grant from Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Program administered by the National Marine Fisheries Service, and for an increase in federal funds expenditure limitation in the same amount. The funds come to, or this is a continuation of funds that we've been receiving for some time, and they come in different in allotments over time. These funds come to Oregon from a congressional appropriation to Oregon via OWEB to support the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. We knew during the legislative session when we were working on the expenditure limitation for the last allotment of these funds that there was a possibility that this that another grant would appear sometime soon after the session. We weren't sure when, but there was a general understanding with the committee that it might happen, and I would come back in when it did. My letter outlines the process that we've gone through, and I recognize the sensitivity surrounding retroactive approval requests. If you've got questions about how we engage to try and comply with the spirit of the process, I'll be happy to answer them. Suffice it to say, we got a phone call out of the blue and had about 3 days to apply for the grant, and the grant was issued to the state of approximately 5 days after that. So we worked closely with Legislative Fiscal Staff, Department of Administrative Services, leadership, and I think I informed some of the members of this committee what was going on so that we could try to be sensitive to the whole issue about coming to you for retroactive approval. But here we are. It is an important grant in that it provides some substantial resources to the state that can be used to help augment the programs that are both agency programs as well as the efforts of soil and water conservation districts, watershed councils, data collection, watershed assessment, a variety of things. The OWEB board in the past, when we've gotten these blocks of money, have put together a spending plan, which is attached to the request as attachment B. That spending plan just sets out blocks that would that would be the general areas that the board would consider distributing funds to. And we did that as we've done with other prior grants. I think recognizing the realities of the budget situation, I understand the legislative fiscal staff recommendation to allow us to accept a grant but not have the expenditure increase and defer that for some time. The result of that will be that we'll have some projects that we could get money to soil and water conservation districts and watershed councils for technical assistance to develop projects in time for the coming field season. But frankly, given the realities and the overall budget context, that's certainly a recommendation we can live with and defer requesting expenditure limitation until things sort out in the winter. And we will do that, and I will be happy to modify my request. Simply ask for a permission to apply for the grant and defer seeking expenditure limitation until a future e-board date.
I think we ought to give it to him just so we can assign it to Senator Hannon to carry.
Chair, I just want to clarify for the record if any of these funds are available or planned to be used for purchase of private property.
Chair Westland, Senator Messerly, they are certainly available to be used for that, but the OWEB board in the past has chosen not to do that, and I would not recommend that they do that in the future for a very simple reason. At this point in the grant program that Oregon has, I have lottery dollars that are available for capital expenditure projects, but no state funds that are available for data collection, monitoring, watershed assessments, technical assistance, education kind of projects. These funds are available for that kind of use, and so we have chosen to budget our program to use the federal funds to go in that direction and help supplement that part of the effort across the landscape than for capital expenditure projects we have lottery funds available for.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
I knew that was coming.
Mr. Huntington, in the federal budget that came out in the beginning of the fiscal year, I understand that we can expect to be receiving additional funds from the federal government for watershed enhancement. Can you talk to the committee about that situation?
Certainly. Chair Westland, Representative Morgan, the congressional appropriations come on an annual basis, and the Congress is working on the federal fiscal 2002 year. I received an email day before yesterday that indicated that the conference committee had concluded work on the budget bill for the Department of Commerce, which is the conduit for the funds to the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund, and that on the whole, on the allocation that had been agreed to in conference committee, it appears that Oregon will receive somewhere on the order of $15 to $17 million in the federal fiscal 202. And that hasn't been signed by the president, and so I'm not exactly, I haven't seen any writing on it, but I've gotten the email from our representative in Washington, D.C. that the work's concluded and that's the allocation we can expect.
Else?
I have a question, Mr. Chair. The question I had was that I appreciate Mr. Huntington's willingness to come back at a later time to show us the developed work plan. But I wondered if there was a possibility in receiving these grant funds, if this would free up other Measure 66 money that could be available then for the general fund to be examined in the process of a special session.
Question.
Chair Westland, Representative Butler, these funds are administered via an agreement with the National Marine Fisheries Service. We actually get a grant agreement with conditions, and the conditions that are placed on Oregon's receipt of this money are similar to the other states, and the conditions are, for Oregon at least, that the money be dispensed by vote of a citizens board. OWEB is specified as the Oregon Citizens Board, and be spent according to our statutes and grant criteria in our rules for projects that are eligible for our typical grant application process. So
can you give a one-word answer to that question?
The one-word answer would be, it depends. I guess that's a two-word answer. It depends.
I didn't say yes or no.
It depends. I currently do not have any Measure 66 money in my grant program that is being dispersed outwardly to grant projects that we could then just take that block of money that isn't committed, already committed, and turn it over and substitute in these funds behind it. There is discussion, I know, in the building about investigating whether or not there are other ways to direct this money. And frankly, sitting here today in front of you, I don't know if that can be done in terms that are consistent with the grant that's coming from the federal government. I think there's room for a disagreement over whether that's possible.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I appreciate the circuitous method that, by which that was answered, but I also recognize that we are in a time where these funds are critical and they can be utilized for other a multiplicity of other reasons, is my understanding, and going to the to federal funds, source of funds for the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Program, there will be specific uses and applications of those funds, but also want to, and I do recognize that in another application that we have before us, in item number 43, that it will require some matching funds if that application is approved. And so I do recognize that there are other kinds of applications and activities which you're involved in, but I do want to make certain that it would not just have to be for the grant funds that these are being applied for, and that Measure 66 monies are being utilized, that these could be used to supplement or supplant and affect some of those Measure 66 monies.
Representative Westland, Chair Westland, Representative Butler, these monies are available for uses that are the same as Measure 66 monies. That said, there is this is a block of money that comes to the four states and tribes in this region, and a great deal of discussion in Washington, D.C. about whether the grants will continue if they're used to backfill existing programs in any of the states. And hence the grant requirements that came to us saying, and to California and Washington, saying that a citizens board would be looking at the disbursement of funds. I think that there is room for reasonable people to disagree and agree on the use of these monies, and that's one reason for deferring it and waiting to see how things shake out on how this money will be used and where it goes.
Thank
in
you.
Oregon.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, again, Lisa Pearson with DAS, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
LFO.
Mr. Chair, Legislative Fiscal recommends that the request be approved to apply for the grant, which the agency's already received because of the timing of it. I would like to point out that the agency made all efforts possible to comply with notification, and because of the timing, it was difficult to give the 10-day notice, but they did communicate as soon as they heard of this, the funds being available. And LFO's opinion on the answer to Representative Butler's question is yes. Not it depends, but yes.
You took four words, though, to give me the one word answer.
I know.
Did you buy two?
You were two. The okay, Senator Metzger moves, or Senator Messerly moves that we approve retroactively the federal grant application and move it to the full committee. I had to say this because I knew you were going to stumble over the and move to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
That would something like you were going to say?
Absolutely.
Any further discussion? Any objections?
Seeing none, so ordered. Since you made the motion, you can carry it.
Chair, when are you going to carry it?
I'm carrying the last one. Pay attention. The
underwater here.
Watershed Enhancement Board grant application for endangered species animal. Watershed condition.
Hi, Adrian. Good morning, Mr. Chair.
How's every little thing going?
I've had a wonderful morning. Thank you, sir.
Number 40.
Mr. Chair, on number 40, OWEB's here as the carrier on behalf of several agencies, just to consolidate things down a little bit. We're here on behalf of five natural resource agencies seeking permission to apply for grants to the Northwest Power Planning Council. The total of the grant sought, as stated in my letter, is $51,904,011. I am here today, having received word late yesterday afternoon that the Department of Environmental Quality intends to pull its development of a grant application. So we'll have one fewer grants, and the total will be decreased by $300,000.
Which one is theirs?
Theirs is on the third page of the, about three pages. It's at the top of the second to the last page. It was a Willamette Riparian Assessment. And in all honesty, I think that the reason the Department of Environmental Quality has decided to withdraw and not pursue putting in a grant is because we're approaching the deadline for this grant cycle with the Power Planning Council, we are learning just what a long shot these grants are. And I think it's simply a process of gauging how much staff time to invest given what we might get out of this. And unlike OWEB, where we budget ourselves for each grant cycle so everybody has a sense of how much we'll have to spend in each and every grant cycle, the Power Planning Council did not start out this process doing that, and in a lot of people's opinion overspent in the first couple of cycles and has a reduced amount of dollars for all of us to apply for the current round of reviews. And so all of us are doing a little bit of rethinking about how much effort and time we're going to spend participating in the grant cycle. But we're trying to balance that also with being very clear that we have some real restoration and salmon recovery needs in these provinces, and it's important for the state of Oregon to identify those and put them on the table and show the Power Planning Council and the federal agencies what work is out there that we need to be done and we need support for. So we are pursuing the grants that are outlined in this letter. We are asking only for permission to apply. If and when any of the agencies are successful in the grant applications that are itemized in the spreadsheet that's attached to this letter, they will individually return to the emergency board and ask for an increase in expenditure limitation in order to accept the grant and expend it. Right now, it's Water Resources, Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, and OWEB, and have a total of about, I guess, less than 10 of the grants. And the Department of Fish and Wildlife has the bulk of the both dollar amount and grant numbers. Representatives are here from each of those agencies if you have specific questions about the specific grants that are generally outlined in the spreadsheet. And with that, I'll take questions if there are any.
Perfect.
Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
I'll vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Legislative Fiscal Office also recommends approval for submission of the grant applications as described, and as you've also heard then, that would drop out the Department of Environmental Quality $300,000 grant proposal. But also, we're suggesting that the understanding will be that the agencies that are successful grant recipients return to the legislature for a review of the projects selected for funding, as well as requesting any appropriate federal fund expenditure limitation and position authority if needed. That would either supplement their 2001-03 biennial budget or to integrate into their 03-05 budget request.
Any questions? Any concerns?
Representative Minnis.
Excuse me. Representative Morgan. I was going to go. It's just this M thing.
Dark hair. Yeah.
There's a resemblance. I would move that we accept the LFO recommendation as amended and move the issue to full with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none. So ordered. 43, Watershed Enhancement Board. Carrier, sure you want to take this one? Watershed Enhancement Board grant application for watershed restoration priorities. Jeffrey?
Mr. Chair, this is the last of the requests we have today. It's a request for permission to apply for a $65,000 federal fund grant from US EPA. If we were successful, we'll return to the E-Board for appropriate increase in expenditure limitation at that time. This opportunity has come up in between my own board meetings, so I'm going to go to my board in January, talk to them about the grant and the matching funds discussion, and we will withdraw our application if my board decides they don't want to go forward with it. But as we're learning more about this grant opportunity, we're finding that it appears that we can satisfy the $17,000 match requirement by in-kind money that we're already spending for watershed councils and districts and on projects in the Willamette Valley. So it appears this might be a grant we can actually get without having to put up any new match money commitment by the state. Essentially, this grant will focus on how we take existing data sets and make them more usable for local entities that are interested in putting together projects and prioritizing the kind of projects that would have the most bang for the buck. And that's all that I've got to say. If you have questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Questions? Just want to confirm, Mr. Chair, thank you. Just want to confirm that the $17,000 match for the $65,000 grant can be in-kind and is in fact probably already covered under Measure 66 monies, which you're receiving within the watershed enhancement.
Chair Russell and Representative Butler, if they are not in kind, they certainly will be covered by existing pot of Measure 66 monies that we have available for grants and that is at the discretion of my board through our current expenditure limitation.
Thank you.
The Rock. Consistency. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, Lisa Pearson again with DAS, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
Let's see if you can do that in fewer words than Lisa.
Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of the submission of the grant application.
Same amount of words. Any discussion?
Chair, I move approval of this request.
Oh. Any dissension? Any discussion?
May I just a caveat,
sure,
here that we make it very clear that the agency, if they receive the request, come back for the expenditure ability.
I believe that's in the write-up and included in the LFO recommendation. I'm trying to find the exact line, but I'm confident it's there, and Adrian's whispering in my ear, yes. So
very last line.
But I appreciate that being on the record. Any other discussion? Any objections? If not, item is moved to the full board with the recommendation to approve the grant application. So ordered.
Senator Messerling's really stepping up today. What is this, two for you?
It's four.
Thanks, Adrian. Everything go okay in Arizona?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I can't imagine. Divine.
Paul, I haven't seen you in a long time, buddy. Item 27, DEQ, grant application for car sharing.
Hi, Lisa. Good morning.
Good morning.
I will try to break the land speed record.
There you go.
I'm Nina DeConcini with the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'm here on behalf of DEQ to request retroactive grant approval for a U.S. Federal Highway Administration grant that we have applied for. I am not in the habit of trolling the Federal Register in my idle time, so I was not aware of it, and that's why I'm here for retroactive request. We have not received the money. However, we do, based on experience, they move at a pretty glacial speed, so it'll be a long time before I'm back to request a limitation permission. ODOT will also have to request limitation permission because we are not eligible to accept money from the Federal Highway Administration. ODOT has to act as the agent for us. The grant is designed to promote car sharing, which will reduce driving costs for Portland area residents, increase alternative modes, and also try and reduce traffic congestion and air pollution. The match is private, so there is no DEQ commitment from a funding portion of it. And the probably the most important thing is that we've actually requested in the grant to cover the cost of administrative staff to oversee it. So we've really tried to be as respectful as possible in terms of the state expenditure for the grant. I think it's pretty well outlined, but I'll be happy to answer any questions.
It's Amina?
Nina.
Nina.
DeConcini. I'm a nice Irish girl.
I got the DeConcini thing down.
Yeah. Yeah. Irish name. I'm Irish and that ain't
I know. Just want to see if you're still awake.
Could you explain that to Senator Mascarese?
Actually, forget the DeConcini part. I know some DeConcinis. Give me the, I know we're running late, give me the short version of this. This confused me when I read this.
Okay.
What exactly it's going to take? We're going to buy a bunch of cars and people get to use them, like the yellow bicycles? I mean, I'm, you know.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
I mean, if you can give me, I'm a little confused exactly what this is.
Sure. Chair Westland, Representative, or Senator Metzger.
Meserle Metzger.
I know. I've tried to be. Hey. Yeah. This is based on a European model where people need access to vehicles but don't want to fully own them, so that they can, you know, maybe use transit and other modes to try to reduce congestion and air pollution. So the idea is to augment the current car sharing organization that we have in the Portland metro area, where people pay for their mileage and their hours, you know, with one fee, instead of having to physically own a car. And the idea is that you actually reduce your driving, but you still have access to mobility and able, you know, your ability to get around if you need a car, because, you know, if you go to Costco, you can't bring home a piece of tube piping on your bike, for example. So we believe that it's a great voluntary way to, you know, promote alternative modes, increase the ability for alternative transportation and air pollution reduction. And,
well, it's like a co-op.
Yeah.
There's cars. People pay a fee, which pays for insurance and everything else.
The whole nine yards.
And then they sign up to use the car.
You got it.
Sounds like a great private industry idea, but I, you know, I'm glad that the government's going to help us with it. But
Nina, don't be offended. He didn't understand any of the other things that were written.
Yeah.
Well, Chair Westland, Senator Metzger, I want
to
actually.
The courage to ask.
I want to clarify. It is actually for profit. The original organization, we got some seed money from EPA. You know, 70 grand to start this, and now 600 people are currently sharing 30 cars in the Portland metropolitan area. It is private. Basically, we didn't want it to be on the dole. We wanted to see if it could run privately, and it is. This $500,000 grant is to expand it for people like me that live in the Tualatin area that take a bus to work every day, but my car sits idle in a park and ride, and so if you, Senator Messerly, wanted to rent that car, you could be able to do it. But in the current situation, it can only be in the downtown Portland area. So we just think it's a great innovative approach, and we'd like to see you know, the department, you know, would like to see us get it. And whether we get it or not, that'll be a different story.
And hopefully, unlike the yellow bicycles, they actually bring the cars back.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
It is totally cool.
Are you always so kind of laid back and blasé?
Sure. I just want to say this is a lot like having a teenager driver in a house. So, you know, you get to use the car from time to time when they're not using it.
Tom and I know all about
it. You never know if it's coming back.
That's exactly right.
That's
you
may
get a bicycle back.
Facts are as you pray.
Chair Wilson, member of the committee, I can tell you that demographically, the way it breaks out is about half of the people that are current members of Flex Car use it as their only car. And half of the people use it as a second car for that very reason, because they don't want to purchase a second car.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
We'd love to see this expand statewide, so
Tommy,
we're just going to
get that loan after all.
So we hope it'll approve
sure.
it.
This is fun. I mean, this is cool.
How is the bulk of the money actually used? What is it used for? Spend it on?
Okay, no, it's a totally fair question, Chair Westland, Senator Metzger. The money is used to, right now, the current system does not allow any kind of online reservations. We want to be able to evaluate whether a suburban application might work in this particular configuration, because currently it's just the inner downtown Portland neighborhoods that are allowed to take advantage of this. We want to be able to see if certain incentives, like let's say you have a beater car and you're just, you know, you're avoiding getting rid of it, but this might be an alternative that, you know, you're driving it, but it's polluting, and we might be able to use some of that money to incent people to actually get rid of their, you know, gross polluters as part of this project. There are just a whole host of different, you know, ways that we want to be able to get people to try the concept, because most people, if they only have to go to the store once a week, that's one thing, but if they need the car more than occasionally but less than full time, there's no option for them. So this would be able to accelerate the number of vehicles in various neighborhoods around the Portland metro area. Maybe even Welch's.
Okay.
What I functionally heard you say, and I don't object to this, is
yeah.
that...
us get it, and whether we get it or not, that'll be a different story.
And hopefully, unlike the yellow bicycles, they actually bring the cars back.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool.
It is totally cool.
Are you always so kind of laid back and blasé?
Sure. I just want to say this is a lot like having a teenager driver in the house. So, you know, you get to use the car from time to time when they're not using it.
Tom and I know all about
it. You never know if it's coming back.
Yes, exactly right.
That's
you're
right.
Going to get a bicycle back.
Facts are as you pray.
Chair Wilson, member of the committee, I can tell you that demographically, the way it breaks out is about half of the people that are current members of Flex Car use it as their only car. And half of the people use it as a second car for that very reason, because they don't want to purchase the second car.
A lot of that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
We'd love to see this expand statewide, so
Tommy,
we're just going to see.
I don't need that loan after all.
So we hope it will approve it.
Sure. This is fun. I mean, this
how is the bulk of the money actually used? What is it used for? What do you actually spend it on?
Okay, it's a totally fair question, Chair Westland, Senator Metzger. The money is used to, right now, the current system does not allow any kind of online reservations. We want to be able to evaluate whether a suburban application might work in this particular configuration, because currently it's just the inner downtown Portland neighborhoods that are allowed to take advantage of this. We want to be able to see if certain incentives, like let's say you have a beater car and you're just, you're avoiding getting rid of it, but this might be an alternative that, you're driving it, but it's polluting, and we might be able to use some of that money to incent people to actually get rid of their, gross polluters as part of this project. There's just a whole host of different, ways that we want to be able to get people to try the concept, because most people, if they only have to go to the store once a week, that's one thing, but if they need the car more than occasionally but less than full time, there's no option for them. So this would be able to accelerate the number of vehicles in various neighborhoods around the Portland metro area. Maybe even Welch's.
Okay.
What I functionally heard you say, and I don't object to this, is that you're going to use the money any dang way that your innovative minds will come up with to further expand and enhance the program. Is that a fair statement?
Chair Westland, yes and no. I think what we want to do, also members of the committee, is when we first started the original program in 1998 with two cars in Southeast Portland and 25 members, prior to spending any of that money on putting cars on the street, we did statistically valid phone polling, focus groups, research to determine whether people would even use them. I mean, the grassroots organizations that came to me and said, let's put a couple cars on the road, and I said, the heck, we're going to do that. I want to know that they're going to be used, and we're going to, be able to we don't want to subsidize this thing to the end of the, end of the world. So the first phase of this would be to conduct it to see whether or not the suburban application would work, whether or not online reservations would work, some of the technology. Another huge part of this is insurance. It's not a rental car company, but it's not a, borrowing your teenager's car, borrowing your neighbor's car. We've got to figure out these are, it's unique waters that we're in for that. So the first phase is for this market research. The second is to actually try to implement some of these, put these cars in suburban locations to see. So it's pretty well laid out in the grant application, and I can go over that in more detail. Okay.
All right. Not to discourage you, not that you could be discouraged, but the...
Well, let's see if we get the money.
Yeah. Alamo and Enterprise filed for Chapter 11. So that's travel related, and you're in a market segment, if you will. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Lisa Pearson with DAS, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request for retroactive authorization to apply for this grant.
Words, see if you can beat her.
Legislative Fiscal also recommends that approval be granted for application for the grant, and that DEQ will appear at a later emergency board if they find that they need further expenditure limitation to cover the grant funding. I would also note that the grant approval is being requested retroactively because they became aware of the grant about the time of the last emergency board meeting, and the timelines did not really match up to allow them to come to the emergency board until this time.
And that they exercise due diligence and good faith in trying to expedite this, but timelines mean what they are. I want to put that on the record for when Senator Hannon starts to grill the carrier. Any further discussion? Any objections to moving the grant
request forward retroactively, grant approval request retroactively forward to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Seeing none, so ordered. Who's feeling left out?
Senator Metzger is another Irishman.
I think this is appropriate. Yeah.
We'll get a car in your neighborhood.
Yeah. You've got to curry favor with this young lady because, I mean, you know, I mean, Welch is, they're kind of going the other way.
She got the keys.
Yeah, she got the keys, but.
So to speak.
Okay. Hey, he does analysis on cars. I mean, that's where he came from. He test drives automobiles. Moving right along. Okay, we've got Senator Metzger down as carrier. Division of State Lands, grant application, endangered butterflies, 33.
That's the one I wanted.
Hey, we're going to take care of that.
Chair Westland, members of the committee, I'm Ann Hannes, director of the Division of State Lands. Yes, I am here for butterflies today. This is a grant that we're asking your permission to apply for on behalf of the Oregon Natural Heritage Program for a federal grant from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife for about $120,000. The grant money will be used to develop safe harbor agreements for two butterfly species, the silver spot and the Fender's blue butterfly. And we're applying for the grant because we're the designated agency through the Natural Heritage Advisory Council to manage threatened and endangered invertebrates. So bugs and slugs are us through the Section 6 ESA grants. The safe harbor agreements are essentially voluntary agreements that protect landowners from incidental take problems. It's an incentive developed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife to encourage creation of new habitat without requiring future obligations on the part of landowners. For example, we know that there are landowners that are interested in pursuing this, and yesterday, for example, I spoke with Bond Starker of Starker Forest, and he's very interested in pursuing this because they hope to do some restoration, and this would provide them in protection in areas where they want to do that restoration. DSL would be responsible for distributing the funds and providing an accounting of the final reports, and the Oregon Natural Heritage Program would develop agreements and a monitoring system, as well as provide information to us for reporting to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And we're okay with both the analysts' recommendations on coming back once we have a specific amount.
I mean, you get it? Do you think there's a high likelihood you get it?
We think that we're going to get at least part of it, if not all of it. Earlier this year, U.S. Fish and Wildlife had approached us to pursue this grant, but it came in the last week of the session. It wasn't clear if it was going to obligate us to long-term monitoring, and also was unsure at that point whether or not there was landowner support. Now I know there's landowner support. I know that it's not going to obligate us for the future past the grant, and so we've decided to pursue it.
Bugs and slugs are us. Now I know why Cleary left the area.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr.
Oh, excuse me, Tom.
Sure.
Wayne, you want to come up and join us?
I'm fine,
Chair. Okay. Your pleasure.
Thank you, Mr. Tom. Chair. Just a question relative to the 25% grant requirement, match requirement. Will that be available for in-kind?
Chair Westland, Representative Butler, we anticipate that partners will provide that match so that it won't come from state monies. It'll come from, for example, the City of Eugene or maybe the Nature Conservancy or OSU McDonald Forest have said they want to contribute to that.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, again, Lisa Pearson with DAS. And we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request, but with a modification, and that is to unschedule the expenditure limitation increase that is being requested until uncertainties about the amount of funding are resolved.
Legislative Fiscal also recommends approval of the request to apply for the grant, but we would ask the agency to return at a later date to ask for or to request expenditure limitation instead of granting expenditure limitation at this point and then unscheduling it.
Think that's appropriate? Any questions? Any discussions? Senator Metzger, the butterfly man, moves that we approve the grant application for $120,000 on the Division of State Lands, and that we require the agency to come back to the emergency board should the grant be approved to request the expenditure limitation. Did I get that right? Good motion, Senator.
Thank you.
Any discussion?
Bugs and Slugs kind of a guy, isn't he?
Any objections? Seen none? So ordered. And your wish is my command.
I do.
I mean, Metzger, you're it, buddy.
I don't like spiders and snakes.
Next item, 34, Division of State Lands, coho salmon and cutthroat trout habitat monitoring.
Again, my name is Ann Hannes, Director of the Division of State Lands. We came before you earlier this year in May and sought and received your approval to apply for this grant, which would be used for monitoring the efforts of recovery of coho salmon in areas where there had been restoration work done on South Slough National Estuary. We have now received approval that we've received that grant, and so we'd like to be able to move forward on it and have our expenditure limitation increased.
Questions?
Mr. Chair, again, Lisa Pearson with DAS, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request, but with a modification, and that is to increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $26,500 for a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grant to monitor the recovery of coho salmon and cutthroat trout habitat in the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve, and request the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule $9,700 pending the agency's receiving a state fiscal year 2003 budget.
What happened to that economical use of words you...
Mr. Chair, I did not write this.
Well, I'd ask you to state it again, but hopefully Paul's going to say the same thing.
LFO would concur with the DAS recommendation as modified.
Hey.
Mr. Chair, I move.
Do I have a motion to that effect?
Yes, I move.
Senator Messerly has so moved the DAS and LFO recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seen none. So ordered.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Senator Messerly, you guys are going to try to set us up here. You're trying to get more into the House. Okay, item 38, Water Resources Department grant application and implementation of Klamath Basin Water Study. Dr. Cleary.
Chair Wesson, members of the committee, I'm Paul Cleary, Director of the Water Resource Department. With me is Fred Listener, the head of our groundwater management program, if you've got any technical questions. Item 39 is our request for permission to apply for, accept, and expend federal funds in the amount of $380,000, which will combine with $120,000 worth of general fund to use in a cooperative study with the U.S. Geological Survey that will put in $500,000. 38.
I announced that.
38. I skipped ahead. I was trying to move things along.
Sure.
We've been involved in a cooperative study with USGS since 1998 down in the Klamath Basin. This biennium, that study will have about $1 million in expenditures. We're hoping to use the $120,000 that we got in general fund to leverage about $820,000 or $780,000 of federal funding, about an 8-to-1 leverage ratio. As you know, this year we turned heavily to groundwater in Klamath Basin to supplement and replace surface water. We approved 93 emergency groundwater permits and 29 limited licenses with a combined production potential of about 150,000 acre-feet of water. Bureau of Reclamation spent $2.2 million acquiring groundwater in both Oregon and California. California put $5 million into groundwater development. With the legislature's assistance, there was an appropriation of $2 million for groundwater development in irrigation districts in Oregon. We've been working with 13 different districts, have approved 7 different well proposals to date. We're trying to keep them under $125,000 per well, so we're spending a lot of time trying to identify shallow parts of the aquifer that will have good production potential. We're meeting today with districts reviewing 3 more proposals. Obviously, in order for us to do our job, both in terms of managing the resource, developing it on a cost-effective basis, and protecting existing users, we need as much information as we can on the characterization of the aquifer, the ability to use it on a sustainable basis. That's what this study is aimed at.
Questions? Representative Krieger, I know it's an important issue to you. You're just, okay. Questions? Any discussion? Lisa?
Mr. Chair, Lisa Pearson, Liz Das, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
Mr. Fiscal also recommends approval of the application for the federal funds and an increase in federal funds expenditure limitation of $380,000.
We're done, but you put that also in. Any discussion of the need a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation be approved and to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. All right, Paul, now 39.
Thank you, Chair Wesson. Item number 39 is a request for permission to apply for, accept, and expend federal funds in the amount of $100,000 to continue funding a limited duration hydrogeologist position that is working on our groundwater data collection analysis in the Klamath Basin and also working on a demonstration project in Shasta View Irrigation District. I believe we're also asking for position authority for 0.79 FTEs to cover the time period from December 1 through the end of this biennium. This again is a Bureau of Reclamation funding.
Questions?
Mr. Chair, Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request with a couple modifications. The first is to unschedule the increase in expenditure limitation pending receipt of the grant, and then the other is to, in fact, include 0.79 full-time equivalents in order to take care of that limited duration problem that Mr. Cleary just mentioned.
Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of the grant. It was Legislative Fiscal's office understanding that it was very highly likely that the full grant amount would be approved, and so we did not ask for unscheduling of the amount of money. However, we did recalculate the FTE for the position and concur with the DAS recommendation of 0.79 FTE for a natural resource specialist 3 position, limited duration.
So just so my slow mind understands, your recommendations mirror each other with the FTE and the scheduling.
Mr. Chair, we mirror each other in terms of the full-time equivalency. We're recommending that the increase in expenditure limitation be unscheduled, whereas LFO is recommending that they just receive it with no strings attached.
No, I like that, Das. You know, those guys do a good job over there. But we live down in LFO, so do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would recommend that the committee accept the LFO recommendation and move it to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you.
Tommy B.
Okay, thank you. Fish and Wildlife, Western Oregon Stream Restoration Program, item 28. Hi, Judy. Oh, and I think it was going so well.
So was mine.
You don't know how true that is, buddy. Go ahead.
Chair Westland, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Item 28, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife requests an increase of $965,525 in other funds expenditure limitation for a continuation of six existing limited duration positions of equivalent to 4.16 FTE, received in legislative approved budget package 362, and establishment of six limited duration positions equivalent to 3.83 FTE to continue the Western Oregon Stream Restoration Program. On September 20th, 2001, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board authorized $965,525 to fund the Western Oregon Stream Restoration Program from the November 2001 through June of 2003. The program assists landowners and watershed councils in completing salmon habitat enhancement actions under the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. Any questions?
Just a comment, if I might, Mr. Chair. This is a really good example of the OWEB board working together with the legislature and the agency to fund what was is most definitely a priority in the Oregon plan, and I very much recommend that we approve this request.
I mean, it's an excellent example of use of Measure 66 funds. I appreciate everyone's endeavor in bringing this forward and making this happen a reality, assuming the committee approves it. But I'd recommend, just to spite ball, we turn it down. Yeah. Anyway, any other serious discussion? Lisa?
Mr. Chair, again, Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
Chair, I move approval with a due pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none. Item 28 is moved to the full e-board with a due pass recommendation to approve the request. So ordered. Susan. Item, and we're ripping right along here, 29. ODF&W grant application for sage-grouse conservation plan.
Chair Westland, members of the committee, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife requests retroactive authority to apply for $50,000 of federal funds from the U.S. Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management to assist in the development of a long-term conservation plan for sage-grouse. Federal timelines precluded prior emergency board approval, but the 10-day written notice of intent to apply was submitted to the co-chairs on September 17, 2001. And the Department of Fish and Wildlife and BLM have taken leadership roles with the development of conservation strategies for sage-grouse in Oregon. This is a direct result of efforts to prevent federal endangered species listing. I would like to add that in the last 3 years of research conducted by the department in conjunction with BLM, I think we are favorably looking at an increasing population of sage-grouse, discovering new populations as we conduct this research, very similar to what was accomplished with research in the Klamath Mountain Province Steelhead. Any questions?
Questions, concerns, comments? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I want to express personal gratitude for the work that's being done. This particular employee of ODF&W resides within my district, and he's doing an excellent job. And I would just offer to any member of the House or the Senate, if you want to get to the bottom of something or have concerns, there are a great number of folks out there that are really, really dedicated to getting the job done, and I have one in my district and would offer his services. And he's doing an excellent job in examining the sage-grouse population, as I say, to basically back up what Director Ball is indicating. New population, new leks of sage-grouse are being discovered and determined, and to identify for us that this is not the endangered species that it once was considered to be. So just really appreciate the good job that that Walt is doing out for us, and Walt Van Dyke in Eastern Oregon. In this
Thank you.
Good. Susan?
I have no questions.
Oh,
looks like a question. Lisa?
Mr. Chair, Lisa Pearson with DAS again. We recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
Beat me every time. Want to make a motion, Tom?
I move that we approve the request.
We move the request to the full board with approval. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Butler, would you honor us with carrying this one? Item number 30, Department of Fish and Wildlife grant application for cheatgrass control in Boardman.
Chair Westland, members of the committee, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife requests retroactive authority to apply for the U.S. Navy for a $22,500 federal grant for the department to conduct wildlife habitat improvement project on the Navy bombing range near Boardman. Federal timelines precluded prior emergency board approval, but the 10-day written notice of intent to apply was submitted to the co-chairs on September 17, 2001. Specifically, the Navy grant would fund a large-scale cheatgrass control project using a chemical OUST, or OUST, in an effort to improve shrub step wildlife habitat targeting the Washington ground squirrel. ODFW has been involved with cheatgrass control research on the Navy bombing range since 1999. The chemical agent OUST has provided better habitat for the Washington ground squirrel by killing the cheatgrass and allowing the shrub steppe habitat to thrive. Approximately $15,000 would be used for contractual services with aerial spray. $7,500 would be used for staff time to monitor the success of the program and evaluation of the program. Questions?
Sure. Report states that the $7,500 for administration of the project, that's about a third of the cost, seems extremely high, but the word you used was monitor, so that might be the answer to my question.
Chair Westland, Senator Messerly, over the month prior and the months preceding after the spraying, what takes place is we have to monitor the area that is sprayed to see whether or not the chemical agent was actually effective on eradicating the cheatgrass, to determine if we want to move forward with this kind of a practice in future time. It covers the time and the cost of vehicle travel for two employees for that year's time.
So that is part of the administrative cost that Senator Messerly is concerned about.
That's correct. It's not just a strict administrative overhead cost. It goes to staff to
implement the program.
Implement the program and monitor. Thank you.
One question, Mr. Chair, and that is the question regarding the Washington ground squirrel. Is it listed at this time, or is it just in potential danger of being listed?
Chair Westland, Representative Butler, it is listed on the Oregon Endangered Species Act. It is a candidate species for the United States Endangered Species Act.
Thank you.
And hopefully, if we could have the best of both worlds, if we could improve the population number, we may be able to avoid a federal listing.
Well, in that regard, Mr. Chair, I just say that the best of both worlds, just go ahead and get it so that it's in good shape, and then just go ahead and start charging Washington rent for keeping the ground squirrels on the Oregon side.
I have a motion.
I'll put that in a motion.
Okay, we're talking about cheatgrass here, but I understand your comments and concern. Any other questions for Lindsay? Lisa?
Mr. Chair, Lisa Pearson with DAS. We recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
LFO also recommends approval.
Senator Morgan.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I move that we accept the LFO recommendation, approve the request, and recommend it do pass to the full committee.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered.
Any volunteers, Jerry?
I've got a lot of cheap grass.
Yeah, boy, don't we all.
Representative Butler.
Thank you.
We'll carry. Department of Fish and Wildlife grant application for fish and wildlife habitat studies.
Chair Westland, members of the committee, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife requests authorization to submit a grant proposal to the National Marine Fisheries Service, two grant proposals to the U.S. Forest Service, and one to the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. The first, to the National Marine Fisheries Service, to be received after January 1, 2002. To avoid a federal listing.
In that regard, Mr. Chair, I'd just say that the best of both worlds, just go ahead and get it so that it's in good shape, and then just go ahead and start charging Washington rent for keeping the ground squirrels on the Oregon side.
I have a motion.
I'll put that in a motion.
Okay, we're talking about cheatgrass here, but I understand your comments and concern. Any other questions for Lindsay? Lisa?
Mr. Chair, Lisa Pearson with GAS. We recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
LFO also recommends approval.
Senator Morgan. Senator?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I move that we accept the LFO recommendation, approve the request, and recommend a due pass to the full committee.
Thank you, Representative. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Any volunteers, Kerry?
I've got a lot of cheap grass.
Yeah, boy, don't we all. Representative Butler.
Thank you.
We'll carry. Department of Fish and Wildlife grant application for fish and wildlife habitat studies.
Chair Westland, members of the committee, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife requests authorization to submit a grant proposal to the National Marine Fisheries Service, two grant proposals to the U.S. Forest Service, and one to the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. The first, to the National Marine Fisheries Service, to be received after January 1, 2002 for a nearshore rocky reef habitat survey using multi-beam sonar. The project surveys a rocky reef and surrounding seafloor habitat off of Cape Mears, Oregon, for the purpose of developing a detailed bathymetric data set for evaluating and characterizing the nearshore reef habitat for our marine species, fish species. At the end of the fiscal year, September 30th, 2001, federal agencies notified us of additional funds available through the U.S. Forest Service, and we request to fund $9,500 for a Salmon River Chinook otolith and scale analysis that would evaluate the benefits of estuarine marsh restoration to salmon as indicated by life history, diversity, growth, and survival to adults. In other words, the work that is being conducted by the U.S. Forest Service in the estuary at the Salmon River will be evaluated to see whether or not it is benefiting our anadromous fish runs. The U.S. Forest Service is also requested to fund $22,200 to upgrade the existing Upper Herman Creek fish screens and fish ladder at the diversion structure. Presently, both fish ladder and fish screens do not comply with federal or state criteria for the passage and screening requirements of salmonids. In addition, there are federally listed stocks of salmonids present in Herman Creek. And the last request is from the U.S. Bureau of Land Management to fund $17,000 for South Fork Crooked River aquatic habitat inventory surveys in the South Fork Crooked River. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you. Just with regard to the Upper Herman Creek fish passage, the $25,000 match there, will that be an in-kind match by the department? Is that what that's about? The others, I don't think any of the others require any match at all, so.
Let me defer to Ed Bowles. He should.
Yes.
Yes, that is correct, Senator Representative Butler.
Thank you.
Any other questions? What was your name again?
Linda Gilbert. Mr. Chair, Lisa Pearson with that. We recommend that the subcommittee approve the request.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee approve the LFO request and move this matter to the full board with a due process recommendation.
Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Want to hear this one, Tommy?
Yeah, I can do that. They really had Ken Messerly written all over it.
This one had Messerly written, all right.
Rocky Fish Reef Habitat off the gate.
Messerly. This is a coastal issue.
Yeah, it really is.
This is a coastal issue, but it's got Crooked River Ranch in it, I mean, you know, Crooked River.
Well, and the Herman Creek there.
This is a big decision.
Senator Messerly.
Yeah.
Metzger.
Metzger. Co-carriers.
Yeah, we can have co-carriers.
I don't think so.
Senator Messerly.
Hey, we're doing good.
All right.
I'm the one delaying this. Department of Land Conservation and Development Grant Implementation for Wetland Inventories, item number 32.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anna Russo. I'm the Urban Division Manager for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We're here today to request an increase in our federal expenditure limitation of $108,000 and approval of a limited duration position. In September, the Emergency Board granted approval to apply for a grant from the Environmental Protection Agency for wetland and riparian planning work that we would provide technical assistance and local governments to local governments and grant funds to local governments. We were successful in receiving that grant and now are here for the expenditure limitation to receive the funds. At the September eBoard, we were requested to provide a report on how our wetland planning program would complement and coordinate with the wetland planning programs from the Division of State Lands, and there is a report attached to the request explaining how those are would work together and complement each other. So, sorry, please.
I assume that this is for a 1.5-year position?
Yes, it is.
I didn't see that in the report.
Yes, we, Mr. Chair and Senator Messerly, we were actually awarded $150,000, but the time remaining in the biennium allows us to only fund it for 18 months.
On this?
Ms. Gilbert?
No, we're going to goof up the whole works here.
Mr. Chair, this is the last time. Lisa Pearson with DAS, and we recommend that the subcommittee approve the request to increase expenditure limitation by $108,000 at federal funds and to establish one limited duration full-time position at 0.75 full-time equivalency, which is the phase-in for the year-and-a-half position.
LFO
agrees.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept LFO and the LFO recommendation and move the matter to the full eBoard with a due pass recommendation.
Good motion. Any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Any volunteers? Metzger's been, we've been
you
know, kind of.
All right,
isolated.
I'll do it right after the butterflies.
You're a wetland butterfly kind of guy.
I'm getting there.
Bugs and slugs.
Bugs and slugs. We have already done item 55, so we'll pass over 55, obviously, to go to 57, Department of Administrative Services report on compensation plan changes.
15 has been approved.
No, I don't.
Oh, well, it's probably right here. It is going.
It's not here.
I know. It's just we were drawing yesterday.
Just after?
Okay.
Good news.
We might make it sometime.
Well, we got a half an hour to grill some people, you know? Sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dan Kennedy, the administrator of the Human Resource Services Division at the Department of Administrative Services. I'm here this morning to report to you on the most recent changes in the state's compensation plan. This is a report that we make
and have to make every time. We have a change in our compensation plan. We come before you and have to make this report before we can implement it. The major report we had was at the last emergency board that implemented most of the major compensation plan changes, which were the collective bargaining agreements and so on. Here we have some union agreements that have been made since then. So they are one particular selective salary increase for the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, formerly known as the Oregon Public Employees Union, OPEU. We finished the collective bargaining agreement with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees for the Oregon Association of Justice Attorneys. Those are the attorneys of the Department of Justice. We also are implementing for the unrepresented attorneys of the Department of Justice, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees at the Oregon State Hospital for Nurses. We're still awaiting ratification of that agreement, and as soon as it's ratified, we'll be able to implement. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees for the Corrections Non-Security, the strike-permitted unit at the Department of Corrections, and that's also pending ratification. The Oregon State Police Officers Association has agreed to terms, and the Graphic Communication Union at the State Printers Plant. With that, Mr. Chairman, those are the agreements that we're intending to implement, and I'd be happy to ask or answer any questions you have.
I have to tell you, this was one of the most really intimidating reports that we got this time, and I'm going through this and I'm going, holy smokes. So I think I and most of the people on the committee are relying on our good staff and DAS to help us through this. And I guess I'd ask if there are any questions we should be asking.
One, Mr. Chair, I believe Mr. Kennedy, I don't believe you mentioned the addendum that was subsequently submitted to the report. We received an addendum, which we have, and it's been our past practice to allow addendums to be submitted, and because it's simply a reporting process and it enables them to then implement the agreements and the addendum upon acknowledging the receiving that.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wines, for reminding me of the agreement that we just signed, a tentative agreement with the Oregon Nurses Association at the state-operated community programs, Eastern Oregon Training Center and the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center, for differentials in salaries, and that, again, is pending their ratification.
But is likely, I'm assuming.
We hope so, Mr. Chairman.
Questions?
One question for LFO. What happens if we don't accept this receipt of this? We don't receive the report.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, not being an attorney, the law merely requires that they report to us. Having done so, I believe, fulfills the obligation under statute so that they may implement the agreements. We formally like to acknowledge receipt for the minutes and such, but that would be uncharted waters for your staff here. I'd have to go back to someone else with history longer than mine in this respect. I have not had a case where we've not acknowledged receipt of the report. Again, I think because the statute just requires that they submit the report.
And is not conditioned on, I mean, our acceptance of the report is not a condition of the agreements being implemented.
They're submitting.
That's where you were going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose the one question I would have, and this is, I don't even really want an answer to this, but it's, you mentioned, I believe, OSP in here, and we set up a very strong and firm understanding with OSP this time, and I think the officers and management and legislature all worked very closely together, and I'm just making the assumption
that the settlements in here reflect a an amount and a collaborative effort that we will still be able to achieve the goals of putting the additional sworn officers on the road and at their forensics and investigative desks, sans any other budget shortfalls. Is that confusing enough for you?
I understood it, Mr. Chairman. That's our understanding.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Linda Gilbert, Department of Administrative Services, DAS recommends that the committee acknowledge receipt of the report.
Legislative Fiscal Office also recommends acknowledging receipt of the report and its addendum.
And it's, you're going to get that in there, aren't you?
I have to.
Representative Morgan?
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept the LFO recommendation, acknowledge the receipt of the, and acknowledge receipt of the report.
Question? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone desperate to carry this? Okay, I'll carry it.
Make it a short pony.
Give me the short pony. I want the short pony. Item 58, Department of Administrative Services e-government project has been withdrawn. So we're down to 60. Mr. Royko, Public Employees Retirement System implementation of SB 134 and new rule making.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jim Boydko, and I'm the director of the Public Employees Retirement System. I have Dale Orr with me, who's the fiscal administrator in the audience. We're here today to request limitation for items in two categories, as you noted, totaling approximately $265,000 of other funds. The two categories are the implementation of selected aspects of Senate Bill 134, which was recently passed by the legislature. And the second category are two actuarial studies needed to properly execute two major rulemakings that are underway before the PERS board, dealing with actuarial equivalency and equal to or better than analyses of the roughly 10 remaining PNF non-PERS plans in the state, and that's required by statute that we periodically review those. I hope that our presentation linked the specific request to the particular aspects of Senate Bill 134. We're happy to answer any questions about those. I hope that they're very straightforward. And the two rulemakings, the actuarial equivalency rule, which you may have read about, and the equal to or better than PNF analysis, are also both noted as separate items, and there's really not much entanglement between these particular requests and anything else that we're doing occurs at the present time.
Great. Questions?
Sure, I hesitate to maybe show my ignorance, but my first blush as I read through this report is that this is a normal cost of operation for a board or commission. I guess I'm just wondering, was this part of the agreement when we passed the bill, Senate Bill 134, or that we would provide funding to implement?
My understanding was part of the appropriation and part of the additional responsibilities we put on PERS, but maybe Dallas could flesh that out.
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Yes, passage of the bill, no additional limitation was provided either with the bill or in consideration of the department's budget. In fact, the recommendation was that after any legislation or all legislation had passed that affected PERS, that they would then evaluate in total the impact on its operations and then come forward with a request to the emergency board. So this request is consistent with legislative directive, and these are over and above what had been considered in their budget.
Fair question. Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question that I think Senator Messerly was with us 2 years ago when we asked this question, and I'm not certain how many other times it's been asked, but in this process, as we go through and modify and allow different iterations of the PERS on behalf of those groups of employees who would select and elect specialized special treatment and specialized forms of withdrawal from the system, are you continuing to consider taking a look at the actual cost of the system of offering these and also attempting to pass along or discussing the passing along of any additional costs to those employees who make special elections out of or into the overall PERS system?
Chair Westland, Representative Butler, from time to time and under current circumstances, there are some selected transactions that are highly unusual and elected by members that we do have an administrative charge for. In general, however, when the legislature has set up an option that applies to most or all members and not specifically directed the public employees retirement system to assess a charge for executing that, we have not taken it upon ourselves to either impose one or propose one to the legislature.
Mr. Chair, just in keeping with the discussions which we have had, we've tried to make certain that the PERS system is a pay-as-you-go system for those folks who select specialized treatment. And I want to reiterate, this is elective treatment. It's not mandatory treatment, that the folks have an opportunity to select specialized arrangements. And in that event that they do select different options, it's my understanding that the system does have an opportunity to go ahead and charge, much like private systems do, and that would protect those existing employees and those employees who are already under the retirement system in the retirement stages. So I just am very concerned that we need to make certain that we know the costs per account when we make these kinds of iterations and options available, and then that we at least have discussions, or that the commission itself have discussions within the members of the commission of those costs and how they could pass those along to those folks that are making those specialized kinds of elections. I guess I better get off that soapbox.
Sure, we got 15 more minutes, or there's 16 more minutes to blow, so. But that does beg a question of, is the commission prohibited from charging fees back to the people accepting the service?
I'll give you two answers.
Chair Westland, Senator Messerly, I believe we have a generic provision in our statute that does permit the board to assess administrative fees in particular circumstances. It's very general, and therefore its scope is not known. In other conversations with Representative Butler, we have, because this has been a special interest of his, we have enumerated those areas where the board has, in fact, a fee in place. In general, though, when an option is available and is in many ways mutually exclusive from others, there are 12 options, now 13, you can pick one, and there hasn't been specific legislative direction. They said we have not decided to propose one. If the legislature would like us to study that issue further, I'm sure that we would certainly respond.
Chair, members of the committee, it's been our approach that these generalized benefit options that this legislature provides are covered in the normal operating costs. The legislature, when it does provide specific exceptions or exemptions, or people can opt in or buy back a certain service or benefit, that the statute, when the bill is passed, that there would be a provision in there that the public employees retirement system recoup the administrative cost of that exceptional service. So, and we stress that upon them, and I know the board is aware of that, but those are so that's a long-winded answer to it. It's sort of two answers that for the ongoing, the options that are available to all members virtually of, you know, choice of survivor, spouse sort of thing. There's no special charge for that. But those were for a given class or a given person to, say, come in and buy back your first 6 months of employment, that there'd be a fee charged for that, because that's different from the ongoing, you know, the options provided under the statute. These are specific allowances or exceptions provided to certain individuals if they opt to take advantage of that. And some of the cases are very specific. Then the board is allowed to and encouraged to charge a fee to recover the cost of the services. And in certain bills that Representative Butler, we were involved with last the prior session, it was very specific that we made it clear that it could include all administrative costs. And that is what this office has been working with them and encouraging them when they set those fees to look not only at some direct staff costs, but indirect costs of providing those services.
Are they in fact doing that, Dallas? And passing those costs on?
I would have to.
Chair Westland, Representative Butler, as we have discussed, we are looking particularly in the area of the costs of communications to third parties about the system, of assessing charges for that, because that's the easiest and clearest situation, because they're not members of the system. All of the administrative expenses of executing statutorily mandated transactions are funded by the members and their employers, because all of the expenses come out of the fund. You know, the issue that has been raised is whether or not some transactions are unusually expensive or complicated, and therefore the initiator ought to bear some special cost as opposed to having that cost spread among all the members. But there are no transactions that cause costs that aren't charged back to the participants in the system. We're a closed system in that respect.
Mr. Chair, may I? That really doesn't answer the question. Are those people who are electing to have specialized treatment, either transfers or specialized modifications and so forth, are they being charged directly for the service that they're receiving? That's the question.
Only in a selected number of circumstances, Representative Butler. And I think that we will take a look at the spectrum of transactions and be happy to get back to the legislature on, well, I can raise this issue with the board explicitly and look at a series of transactions and see if the board that has the ultimate authority here would like to go forward with some fees.
Thank you, Mr. Voigtko. And I, those members who will be back in the next session, I would say that the concern continues. That is that in private plans, those folks who make special elections and desire special options to move money, to opt in, to buy in, those kinds of things, always have administrative charges that I'm aware of. And even on accounts where I don't even participate on an annual basis, because I'm a member of them, I get a minimum charge of $85 on my retirement accounts, each one of them. And I appreciate the fact that these costs are calculated and then everyone shares them. That's basically saying that person who is retired, who didn't communicate one iota, well, I shouldn't say that person who is retired, that person who is about to retire, who didn't communicate one iota in this particular year, and that person who is 5 years into the system and just contributing, that person and his employer, his or her employer, are contributing to the cost.
Administrative expenses of executing statutorily mandated transactions are funded by the members and their employers, because all of the expenses come out of the fund. You know, the issue that has been raised is whether or not some transactions are unusually expensive or complicated, and therefore the initiator ought to bear some special cost as opposed to having that cost spread among all the members. But there are no transactions that cause costs that aren't charged back to the participants in the system. We're a closed system in that respect.
Mr. Chair, may I? That really doesn't answer the question. Are those people who are electing to have specialized treatment, either transfers or specialized modifications and so forth, are they being charged directly for the service that they're receiving? That's the question.
Only in a selected number of circumstances, Representative Butler. And I think that we will take a look at the spectrum of transactions and be happy to get back to the legislature on, well, I can raise this issue with the board explicitly. And look at a series of transactions and see if the board that has the ultimate authority here would like to go forward with some fees.
Thank you, Mr. Royko. And I, those members who will be back in the next session, I would say that the concern continues. That is that in private plans, those folks who make special elections and desire special options to move money, to opt in, to buy in, those kinds of things, always have administrative charges that I'm aware of. And even on accounts where I don't even participate on an annual basis, because I'm a member of them, I get a minimum charge of $85 on my retirement accounts, each one of them. And I appreciate the fact that these costs are calculated and then everyone shares them. That's basically saying that person who is retired who didn't communicate one iota, well, I shouldn't say that person who is retired, that person who is about to retire who didn't communicate one iota in this particular year, and that person who is 5 years into the system and just contributing, that person and his or her employer, are contributing to the costs of making those specialized calculations for those people who are making special options, and that's not equitable, and we need to stop and take a look at that. This should be a fee-for-service, pay-as-you-go, pay-as-you-play in this kind of arrangement.
By the beneficiary of the, quote, special service. Across the board.
That's exactly correct, and that was the point that I was trying to get across to Mr. Voitko. It isn't just because we've calculated the cost and everybody is sharing the cost doesn't mean that the person who is receiving it is receiving, you know, it might make a difference of 2 cents during their entire retirement life because it was charged against the whole fund as opposed to that person who is requesting and receiving any kind of specialized service.
And that's where this 265 other funds is coming from.
Chairman Westland, the 265 would come out of the trust fund as all of our administrative expenses do.
So I guess the question is, and what the committee is having, it appears, a great deal of difficulty with, is why aren't we assessing for the administration of the services rendered to specific recipients of those services? Why aren't they paying?
In a selected number of instances, Chair Westland, they are. But as a general matter, as the LFO staff have indicated, for those statutory options which are available to all members, and any one of them might be elected by a member, we don't have a specific administrative charge. Statute hasn't directed us to, but there is a portion of statute I mentioned that has a generic authority to assess fees, and I think Representative Butler is suggesting that we look at that authority and look at situations where there are unusual costs associated with some transactions that may not be appropriate to spread the costs among the entire membership base. I hope I phrased that correctly.
We're not trying to trip you up here. We're not trying to deny this thing. I mean, but I think there is a fairness and an equity issue here that the committee, and I want this on the record, as it obviously is that we'd encourage you to look at, I know there's at the very least two returning members here, and you know, don't forget two returning members on the House side. Let the Senate worry about their own. Let's not forget this issue. God willing, the creeks don't rise, I'll be back. But you guys are definitely going to be back. So,
Mr. Chair,
I think there's a flip side to this, and I would like your opinion whether this is, I'm thinking straight or not. We need to be careful that we don't create a burdensome task here that's going to be very expensive to administer, too, I would think. And I'd be very interested in the cost analysis. If you bill out each transaction, if that all of a sudden gets so expensive that you, and more time consuming and staff requirements and everything else, that you lose the ground that you were trying to.
Now, I just respond to that, and I appreciate the fact that dignifies a response from Director Voitko, but I one of the things that we have discussed is the possibility of those people who are inquiring on a regular basis as to their accounts, that basically as you log into the system to inquire, then the first inquiry on a monthly basis is a freebie. I mean, that's part of the administrative cost that everyone shares. But when people are calling on a day-to-day basis as they draw down closer to their retirement date, and they're calling on a daily basis or sometimes more frequently, heaven forbid, to find out in the morning, noon, and the evening, you know, how the fund is doing, and is this a good time for me to go ahead and retire, then as they put that additional burden, and we looked at the number of inquiries and the number of participants in relationship to the number of inquiries we're receiving are literally 5 and 6 times the number of participants. And you say, wait a minute, somebody's going to be calling in more than monthly on this. And so basically what happens is that those folks then begin to pay for the, this is in effect part of the retirement advice that they're getting. What's my account value today in relationship to what I'll get out of it? And a very, very extensive calculation is then performed. And that can be done. It can be done in a computerized fashion so that the folks, we're hoping that as we proceed through the information portion of this, the IT portion, that those folks will have access to information on a computerized basis, but as they're making calculations and so forth and requesting calculations, there are certain types. Director Voitko has mentioned the police and fire units, and we have the judges and others that are specialized types that require extensive calculations, and these folks typically will ask many times during a short period before their retirement, and some years before sometimes, to have those calculations done and redone. And that's a service that's going above and beyond just the retirement system. And so that's what we're asking the board to consider, is the possibility of additional fees to be charged for those additional services that are rendered above and beyond what is customary and ordinary. And yes, Senator Messerly, that can be done fairly inexpensively through the information technology system that is being examined by the board and by the system itself.
But Tom, isn't that a normal service that as people have paid in over the years, paid their fair little share, that as they get closer to retirement, sure they get nervous, sure they get, they've got to have 42 different questions. You know, they're paying down here for getting no service for years and years and years and years as they approach retirement. Then as they get close to retirement, it's like, ooh, I better check on this. And then, ooh, I better check on this again. I think that's a normal human. I think that they're paying for all along.
You bet. And Mr. Chair, what we've asked is that videos be prepared so that video presentations and folks can receive group counseling and can receive other information about the correct questions and the correct method of accessing that, so that they're not coming back time and again and nailing the system. And again, if there are 50,000 calls and inquiries on a regular basis by 100,000 participants, then that's one thing. But when there are 300,000 by that 100,000 participants, then what you've got is multiple inquiries, and so the information is to make, or the idea is to make sure that, number one, counseling, group counseling is available, video counseling is available, and that the folks have the maximum amount of information without any personal interaction available or necessary up front. Some of them may feel uncomfortable about knowing what the actual question is, and then after that, then they can go ahead and start making the inquiries.
Mr. Chair, both your senators have to be at caucus at 12 o'clock.
Well, you blew through the 15. It was your suggestion that said...
I've made a huge mistake. I'm
glad you acknowledged that publicly. Let's do this. I mean, I think we ought to forward the request. But what I would like to see happen, with Mr. Wojtko make a note of this, I know Dallas will, is that let's request an analysis of the cost of any of these special services that are provided by the department, and, you know, where are we with that? You know, I don't want to go to the extent of making a formal request to come back to another e-board, but let's get that information. And I think Tom will probably be knocking on your door to help you remember. Susan will be knocking on your door. If we see something that's out of skew, in fact, you'd probably want to know if it was out of skew. If you could do that analysis for you, I agree with Senator Messerly that, you know, in the administration, there's some of these specialized services that could be just a very cost prohibitive issue. I mean, I think there's two sides to this. So, you know, in the meantime, let's forward this request. Let's get a real quick report from DAS.
Monica Brown with DAS. We recommend that you approve the request.
Let's get an even quicker report from LFO.
Who concurs?
You win the prize today. Senator Morgan has moved that we forward and approve the request by Public Employees Retirement System. The full board will do pass recommendation. Any objections? See none. So ordered.
Okay.
I think that's a very good idea. Oh no, Tom, you are the man.
No, I would do the motion.
Yeah.